Welcome to Steppin' Out, a reality radio show where you'll hear real people sharing their true stories of what it was like to go over the edge and find their way back. And now, Steppin' Out.
And we're back. You're listening to America's 12-Step Radio Show. My name is Drew, and this is Steppin' Out. And hey, one more time, if you want to connect with us here at the show, you can visit us online 24 hours a day at www.steppinoutradio.com. And while you're there, sign up for the newsletter, send us an email, let us know how we're doing. We are focusing on the addiction to crystal meth. What can I say about it, John? I mean, this thing's like, it's at epidemic proportions right now here in this country. I mean, we had crack in the 80s, and now all of a sudden it's crystal meth. You know, what was your story with it? What was it like?
With me, I walked away from a very well-paying job. I was a senior editor here in Manhattan.
Okay.
And the drug became so important to me that I basically walked away. I abandoned that job, actually, and now I'm public assistance.
Is that right?
I came of age during the 70s, so mm-hmm. I did all the drugs. I drank to blackout in college, that kind of thing, but I was always able to stop it. You know, mescaline or whatever drug it happened to be, I was able to somehow stop it.
Mm-hmm.
And with crystal meth, I just couldn't. It was just unstoppable.
Immediately, like when you first
see,
did it grab
case,
you quick?
Yeah, it grabbed me really very quickly. What happened with me was that at the time I first tried it, and I was introduced to it by IV usage, and I was undiagnosed with major depression and undiagnosed ADD.
Okay.
And so I was a sitting duck.
Well, can I ask you a question?
Because I felt normal for the first time in my life.
Yeah, because I was going to ask you, because for ADD, that's where they give you Ritalin, and they pretty much give you speed for ADD, right?
Yeah, and see, when I was coming up, that didn't exist. It wasn't in any of the books or literature, actually.
Okay.
And so I was in my early 40s and introduced to that, and like I said, I felt normal for the first time in my life. And it did not take me very long. I remember about a month later, it was a Monday morning. I should have been getting ready to go to work, and I was busy trying to access money and to get a drug dealer. And it was a real problem within a very short time.
That quick? I mean, why IV, and how did that come to be? Were you doing other things intravenously at that time?
I never had and never dreamed I would ever do that. But what happened was I was very curious. I wanted to take more responsibility about it than it being a midlife crisis, but there were a lot of things I hadn't tried. And with me, it was also very sexual oriented.
Mm-hmm.
I got on certain websites, and a lot of the people in these very dark sexual websites were also doing IV crystal meth, and I was very curious.
Okay,
about
so
it.
They said, if you're going to do it, this is the way to do it.
Exactly. Right. And, even the person that introduced it to me was horrified because I was he could see right away. It was just had taken.
Right.
And I really wanted more and more and more from the very beginning.
Yeah. So you went from nowhere with this thing to the advanced course and, you know. Yeah.
Exactly.
Right from the get-go. That's pretty scary, though. I mean.
It is scary. And what's scary is that, you know, years and years and years, my 401k, my IRAs, all my retirement basically went into my veins. And so it's. But I have to get beyond that. That's a good point about recovery. But it got very dark, very lonely. My world basically imploded into just a few blocks. You know, in New York, it's a large city.
Mm-hmm.
I basically, the drugstore to buy, you know, the needles, the ATM machine, the drug dealer's house, my apartment. My world became extremely small. And I didn't like to leave after... When it's daylight outside, I did all my grocery shopping at a drugstore late at night at a chain
sure.
drugstore.
Did you believe you were like a recreational crystal meth user? I mean, did you know that you were in the throes of this thing?
I think in the beginning,
were you telling yourself?
In the beginning, I thought, oh, this is just fun, and it was weekends. But unfortunately, the weekends became longer and longer and longer. The weekends became like Wednesday till Tuesday kind of thing.
Okay.
It was just getting ridiculous. So.
Okay. And with the needles, I mean, generally you think needles, you think junkie. It didn't pop into your head that maybe things weren't right?
Yeah, that was there. And actually, that was part of the whole dark image of it and being attracted to that dark image.
Okay.
Because I knew, you know, there was just when you're sticking a needle in your arm, there's kind of, it's hard to deny that aspect that you're a junkie, basically.
Right. Yeah. I mean, you know, like I can buy the story that maybe somebody, you know, snorted a rail or crystal meth at a party, but you're not going to just stumble over a syringe. That's a pretty active pursuit.
Exactly. And that's what happened is that beside my whole world turning really like very small, I had been an elected official in New York.
Wow.
I was an elected school board member. I was very active in the Democratic Party. I had served on school board for 6 years. And when I had to be hospitalized for big, because it causes infections in your arm, and so I had a huge abscess. And my mother was coming to visit from Michigan, and I had no one to call except a drug dealer and someone I knew from online to go home to my house and clean up certain paraphernalia and things like that from my apartment. And that's all I had. And that the apartment was unspeakable. It was just a hellhole. It was just really disgusting and dirty.
Oh, man. And where was your family in this? Well, you said they were back in Michigan. You were here.
Yeah, they're there. And it's weird because I called to my mother about it. And she was very understanding. It's interesting. My brother is an alcoholic and came out to them actually about a year earlier about that. And it's my mother's first response was, she said, I want to bring you home right now and take care of you here. But she said, it's rife out here. That she said it's probably worse than New York. And so she didn't want me out there. She thought I would be more triggered by the amount of crystal meth out in Michigan. It's really, there's a lot more out there.
Yeah, the Midwest is just, it's a horror show right now, is it not?
Yeah.
I mean, the stuff that we had the mothers of crystal meth addicts on the show, and I think they were from like Ohio or something like that. And it was just insane the amount of stuff that was going on out there.
And they're very young, from what I gather. And it's hard for me. I'm, you know, kind of like a fully more developed adult in my, you know, early 40s trying this for the first time. You know, it's hard to imagine when you're 16 and doing it, or 15. It's really weird for me.
And you talk about the grip of this thing and how it got you so quickly. I mean, you're going from start to junkie in about a month, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's some serious stuff. I mean, you know, like, this isn't something to take lightly is what I'm getting at. This is as serious as heroin. This is as serious as, you know, any of the other opiates that people are abusing out right now. I mean, it's crazy.
It was very, you know, for me, it was just, I had a lot of arrogance around the fact that up until then, I was able to stop. Cocaine never had a hold on me. I was never interested in it.
Yeah.
All the other previous drugs and alcohol, I could stop. And I thought, well, you know what? I don't have an addictive personality, so I can do whatever I want. And I was really brought down to size real quickly.
Yeah.
And to walk away from a very expensive, you know, really well-paying job, and just to have no, you know, no gratitude about the good things in life. And I just ran myself to the bottom.
Did
actually.
Any of your colleagues come looking for you? Like, hey, man, what are you doing? You know, like, why are you throwing it all away? Were there any people that tried to put their, you know, hand out to you?
They did in the beginning. It was weird because it was my third day of not, I just didn't show up for work for 3 days. And I had the police at my door because where I was working, they were afraid I was dying or was dead. They were afraid that something, because I was never like that. I was called up and let them know. I was very good about that. And they were just extremely worried. And, you know, people here and there, but it was just, I was not ready at that time. I was just so, you know, dragged under by this. I was really, you know, I just loved that drug so much. It was so alluring and very insidious.
Very insidious. Is the best word. And were you in a committed relationship at that time or,
No, it's
no.
not actually.
Okay, so you weren't doing this with a partner or anything like that?
No.
No.
But just with a multitude, actually. So. The multitudes.
Oh, man. So what happens next?
I'm actually grateful because I could have been living this kind of, because with this alcohol and with the other drugs, I could kind of put down, it was at a price. You know, I had a sexual addiction and a variety of things. So I could have plugged along and been miserable for my whole life, basically. You know, I could have been lonely and a loner and isolator till, you know, my 60s or 70s, whatever. And crystal meth really dragged me to the bottom so fast that, in a way, I'm grateful because it caused me to come into the rooms in the 12-step process to learn about the steps and to change myself from the inside out. And I think that's been a very valuable thing. So on a weird level, I hate what that drug did to me. But on the other hand, I'm really thankful for it as well.
Mm-hmm.
That it, I wouldn't have known about this community. I wouldn't have known about recovery, the 12 steps. I never would have had that kind of exposure had it not been for the horrendous loneliness and pain that crystal meth caused.
Absolutely. Absolutely. How about for the mental illness? I mean, when that was taken out of the equation, did you have to get alternative help?
Thankfully, and that's another reason I have to be grateful for crystal meth, because I got the diagnoses that I had
You were unaware of that diagnosis when you were doing it.
I was not aware of the diagnosis.
Oh, I thought you were like self-medicating.
I was actually, as it turns out, but I didn't have a formal diagnosis. I just thought all my life was banging my head against the wall with ADD and with a major depression.
Right.
And so now I have a word and a diagnosis for what these things are. And so I'm also grateful for crystal meth for that, because I never, I was plugging along into my 40s, walking around with this without any kind of treatment. I was able to concentrate more and do things in a more normal way. And so that was one of the reasons why I think that. And I was told by a psychiatrist that it was so alluring and I became addicted so quickly, because I was having a paradoxical effect to, mm-hmm. I was not acting normally to it. I would have a normal meal. Like, that's why I didn't lose a lot of weight, because I was having normal appetite for the first time, being depressed. I would eat normally and I would sleep very soundly. Mm-hmm. So I'd feel very, I'd feel great actually for the first until it just ate up all of my savings. And I was living in a very dirty, filthy way, also with mice running around. And that was part of my recovery process, was that I had to totally, because I have a rent-stabilized apartment in New York City, we know the rent, the rent situation here and the housing situation is very tight. So
sure.
I couldn't afford to leave. But what I did was I repainted, totally changed my living space,
mm-hmm.
because it's important. I was told that, actually at an NA meeting that I attended with a friend, that it really is important to, if you can't move, to just repaint, reorganize your apartment and have things in different spaces,
mm-hmm.
So that it's just a different place. It doesn't remind you of where you use drugs.
You make some sort of mental separation from
exactly.
where you were. Did you ever sit down and get a solid estimate of how much financially went up your arm? I mean, what was the damage on this?
$40,000.
Ouch.
Within, a couple of year period.
And
that, it helped, because I knew some drug dealers, so that I was getting cut rate actually.
Right.
But, it was a very expensive habit.
So the road back financially, I'm sure, is pretty exhaustive as well.
And I'm trying not to think about that. I mean, the whole part of recovery and the 12-step process is to go a day at a time,
uh-huh.
because if you become overwhelmed by the larger issue, you could be drowning in that.
I would agree with that. I had a guest on the show put it very eloquently when he said, you know what, in the beginning, I didn't want to focus on, his sponsor was telling him that he was suggested that he not concentrate on making things better. Just concentrate on not making things worse. And that was, I was like, wow, that's pretty simple, but pretty profound if you think about it, because you would get overwhelmed when you look at all the mess, and you want to get in there and clean it up and all that other stuff that might prevent you from actually getting well,
mm-hmm.
So it sounds like you got a good grasp on this day at a time thing.
And I've an excellent sponsor who's been bringing me through the step work. He's kind of a big book Nazi, as they say, and he's, is very strict about working me through the steps,
mm-hmm.
and written, a lot of writing, and which is good for me as an editor and a writer. So it's getting my brain working again, because I used to edit medical journals and social work journals and legal documents and things, very sophisticated kinds of writing. And when I first came to the program a couple of years ago, I got hysterical trying even just to fill out a regular state insurance form through ADAP in New York State. And that was not rocket science. It was just my name, address, social security number, and a few facts. And my brain was so absolutely fried. And I'm getting it back, and I've been able to write some book reviews and do some writing, writing poetry again and setting out for publication. But I've had a couple of articles published in like the last year. So I'm getting my brain power back again,
because
like I said, it did fry my head.
Good for you. Tell me a little about the early days of your recovery, and what were the things that were suggested that you needed to do to stay well?
There were several things suggested. I wish I'd followed them a little bit earlier. One was to get NetNanny on my computer.
Into what?
To get NetNanny
on my
computer.
What's NetNanny?
It prevents you from accessing certain websites, sexual
gotcha.
Websites and adult websites, which as an adult, I need to be protected from, actually.
Okay.
Because that's, for me, gets me right to the drug. And I had, suggested to change my phone number. I didn't do that either. I was very sorry because, you know, you have a certain amount of stamina to withstand things, but at the wrong moment, you get a phone call at 4 a.m. from someone who wants to use and it's free stuff that I don't have to pay for. Well, then I was kind of a sitting duck for it. Mm-hmm. And that happened. I was in my fourth step, you know, doing inventories for about way over an amount of time. I was sitting it for 6 months, and it was not a good thing. And I got a phone call early in the morning, and you know, left me as a sitting duck. So those kind of things, those kind of guards. And so with me, it was like, because the internet was my access into crystal meth and drugs. I needed to have that curtailed.
Well, like I was sharing earlier, it was very much tied into the whole lifestyle. It was a very much a sexual experience as well with this drug. It's different depending on who you speak with. Like, as I said, when we had the folks from the Midwest out there, like, this is a predominantly straight community, younger demographic altogether. I mean, like, teenagers getting hooked on this stuff really early. Why? Because it's cheap. It's there. And it's easier. The sad thing was they were saying it was easier for them to get crystal than it was for them to buy beer. Mm-hmm. You know, so that's, you know, it's crazy. But so you needed to safeguard yourself. You needed, so to speak, adult supervision.
Exactly. I need to protect myself from myself in some ways.
Yeah.
And I needed to get out of my head and to get out. I was very isolated. You know, it makes addiction. It might have started out really fun in the beginning and really kind of exciting. But sooner rather than later, it just brought in me particularly to a very lonely place. Mm-hmm. And the program was good for that because it gave me a sense of camaraderie with my fellows.
Well, how many meetings were you going to a week? Like, what was that like for you?
I really love meetings. I try now because I'm on public assistance. I have the time. I have no excuses. Mm-hmm. So I try to go to 2 meetings a day, sometimes 3 meetings per day. And I'll mix it in. I have an Al-Anon meeting I go to once a week. Mm-hmm. And I'll stick it in a couple of AA meetings as well.
So you're attacking your disease on a couple of different fronts.
Yeah, and I try to. There's in all the programs, they have literature meetings where they do book study, whether mm-hmm. NA or AA big book study. And I try to do that being ADD. It's hard for me just to have the concentration just to read those things. So it's good to do it in a group setting mm-hmm. so that you know, you read a paragraph and each person does it and you're there. So you're kind of sitting in that room and hearing the message, and it's a good thing.
That's great. That's great. What do you want to say to folks who, you know, who may be wrestling with this deal and maybe out there tonight, they're just like, hey, what, you know, I don't know about this whole meeting thing. This, you know, I'm not sure.
It's weird because I can't really remember what my view was of the 12-step process. I never thought, because I always had friends who were in recovery.
Uh-huh.
I never went with them to meetings, but I always did have friends in recovery and I saw it was a good thing for them. But a lot of people I know kind of see it as a cult, and it's just not a cult because it's so the meetings are autonomous. We have 12 traditions, and those 12 traditions protect the fellowship as a whole from being a cult. And you know, a cult, they wouldn't have the kinds of independence of meetings and things like that that we have. And I think it's really good to. The meetings are great just because you see that you're not alone, that mm-hmm. you're not so unique. A lot of us who are addicts think that we're so unique that, oh, this is only me. But you're seeing that it's quite across the board. And no matter what kind of meeting I go to, I can go to an AA meeting and it could be a straight woman who has kids and lives in a middle class area whose addiction might be different. I can hear the commonality really easily. And luckily for me, I heard that commonality very early on. When I came into the rooms, for some people it takes a little bit longer, but in my case, I heard it loud and clear. You know, I was like, oh, I really had a strong identification.
So you didn't resist that at all. You weren't like, oh, I'm not, you know, I'm not a suburban soccer mom. This makes no, you know, you were cool with it. You got it. You got.
And I was desperate too. I was desperate. I was feeling really horrendous and without a lot of hope. Suicidal. You know, crystal meth brought me to attempt suicide, and you know, when you're that desperate, you're going to be a little bit more willing. And
absolutely.
So my willingness was a little bit better.
Absolutely. Absolutely. John, thank you so much for being with us.
You're welcome.
All right. Once again, you're listening to America's 12-Step Radio Show. My name is Drew. This is Steppin' Out.